Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Rational Face Podcast, the best podcast on the Blabbernacle. I am Brian Dillman.
And I am Brian Kittle.
So on the podcast today, we have a fun episode where we talk about spiritual watering holes. As I read the Givens book, The Crucible of Doubt, they have a chapter about finding your watering places or your spiritual watering places. And for me, I think watering holes sounds better. So we're going with that. And the purpose is, in life in general, you know, we need to be able to be nourished and be able to feel good. And that's generally what people, I think, are talking about, even if they don't know they're talking about that, when they say, I feel the spirit or I feel uplifted or whatever. And, you know, as you go through a faith transition, often things that used to work for you, maybe they don't work anymore. Maybe reading the Book of Mormon, you know, that once upon a time I could sit down and read the Book of Mormon for 10 minutes, feel good and feel ready to stand up and conquer the world. And now that doesn't work. So I have to find something else. So I'm curious, Brian, for you, have you found anything that's maybe a little bit different than your previous ways of going to church, attending the temple, those sort of things? Have you had to find anything? And if so, what is it that fills your spiritual / emotional cup?
Interesting. Yeah. Because as you're going through that, I think that is a natural and important thing. You know, like I always think about like Lavinia Fielding Anderson, where she talks about how we need to be. We talk so much about being children of God, you know, but become adults or at least adolescents of God, you know, that being able to be developing and changing. And I think sometimes we have that expectation that one approach should work all of the time. And it just really doesn't, you know. So just like you were saying, like I used to get so much value like out of like reading the Book of Mormon, reading the scriptures, and I still really enjoy it, but it's kind of a different experience now than it was five, 10 years ago, you know, where I think there are different practices and different things that really get me to that place where that I'm kind of trying to reach towards. And I don't know, like thinking about what those are, I don't know. I enjoy having conversations. You know, I think that's why I do like doing podcasting. I think there's something about being engaged within a good conversation where you're seeing multiple perspectives and seeing kind of multiple people struggling with different aspects of their humanity. I maybe that could kind of be a spiritual practice, you know, see, having conversations with others, you know, I really enjoy doing that. And there are other things as well. Like I still like some of those other things, like going to the temple and going to sacrament meeting and just engaging in church. But that's probably, I don't know, one of the places where I most enjoy and where I try to go are those kind of conversations.
Yeah, and I imagine your conversations that you're talking about are not talking about the weather, but deeper human struggles or triumphs or, you know, the more meaningful sort of conversations.
Exactly, yeah. where you're really getting in deep to who we are as individuals and some of these other things where you're discovering better who we are as humans, you know, I think there's something spiritual about that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too. And kind of like you, some of the church things are still working. As in our ward, we don't have a lot of priests. And so I end up blessing the sacrament a lot. And I can't decide if I enjoy blessing the sacrament because of some spiritual ritual experience or if it's 10-15 minutes where I sit on the stand without my kids climbing on my leg. So it's one of those two.
Yeah.
But anyway, today I've the podcast, I've interviewed three people, Emily Ellsworth, Miranda Marquette, and Connor Hilton, and all of them, they talk about reading different types of literature or writing blogs or poetry or something like that, where they find those as spiritual practice, kind of, I don't know if I would say spiritual practices, but they find them spiritually uplifting. It kind of renews them to be able to keep moving forward in life.
Right.
So let's jump in and see what they have to say. Okay, now I have Emily Ellsworth, and her spiritual watering hole is poetry and literature. I'm assuming reading those. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm not too much of a writer, at least not in any fiction. I do a little bit of personal, I guess, creative nonfiction. But
okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Emily, to start off, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we can learn a little bit more about how you think about the spirit.
Okay, sounds great. So I grew up in Utah County. I grew up in a really small town near Payson, Utah.
What town?
Genola.
When my parents were building their house in Syracuse, Utah, we lived with my grandparents in West Mountain.
Okay.
And I rode in a rodeo one summer in Genola.
Super.
My brothers were busters.
Oh, that's great. My parents live right across the street from the rodeo grounds.
Oh,
in Genola.
Cool.
And so I grew up on Main Street. My husband is from West Mountain, and so we're both Utah County natives, I guess.
Cool.
But, I live in Linden now. I am currently attending BYU. I'm on the 10-year graduation track for my undergrad. I had originally gone to BYU to do public relations, and then I just couldn't take it anymore. The program just wasn't a good fit. And so I got a job with a politician and quit going to school and worked for about 5.5 years, and then kind of realized that having a degree was important. And so I went back, but I decided this time that I was going to pick something that I actually liked. And so I changed my major to English, which at BYU, the English major is pretty much just literature. They have very little with English language, but I do have a minor in editing. So I got the English language part. So I'm working full time and I'm going to school. I'm married. And we have my husband and I have a 4-year-old daughter. So that's pretty much me. I do have a blog, that I review young adult fiction on. I haven't been as active as I'd like, but, it's Emily's Reading Room, and I really do have a love for young adult fiction, and so that's kind of my guilty pleasure that I've been doing that for about 5 years, reviewing books and other goings on with the young adult fiction world.
Oh, that's fun. I like reading some of that stuff as well, from time to time. Okay, so let's jump in. So how do you think about the spirit? How do you describe the spirit or spirituality?
So I always had thought of it kind of the church's kind of twofold idea, that the spirit is first and foremost like a sanctifier. It's how we access the atonement. And then also, you know, the spirit as being a comforter or a means of warning or knowing, you know, having knowledge. And those always worked for me growing up, but as I've, over the past 2 or 3 years, as I've kind of gone through a little bit of a faith transition, I've found, I think that it means something different to me now. And I think how I would define it is just when I think of the spirit and spirituality, I think about human nature and human potential. When I feel like I'm feeling close to the spirit, to me, my knowledge and understanding of God has become so much more ambiguous that I can't really say, you know, I think I'm hearing from God, because I'm not really sure what that even looks like or what that means anymore. But things that make me feel like knowing this or having this experience, either whether it be through reading or speaking with people, hearing experiences or anything, even, you know, watching a movie or listening to music, I think, you know, this makes me want to be a better person. This makes me want to live my life in a way that's better for me and my family and those around me. And so that's kind of what it's turned into for me. And so I guess that's how I would define it.
That's great. I think that's kind of the basic, very basic understanding of it, is pointing you in the right direction, pointing you towards truth, whether you call that capital T or lowercase
yeah.
T truth.
I mean, you're never going to get, I don't think, a real good nailed down truth. But, I think truth can be fluid, but there are some things that I think we can all agree that make us a better people, and those kinds of feelings are important. And so that's what spirituality is for me.
So do you separate spiritual experiences or spiritual feelings and regular emotions, or do you find that those are the same, or how do you think about that conundrum?
You know, truthfully, it works for me better if they're the same, just because I found that trying to say that I was only feeling the spirit when I was engaging in like church-approved activities, especially church or reading the scriptures, as I got older, it just didn't work. I was not really active in seminary. I felt like seminary was a real kind of raw experience and a little bit emotionally manipulative, in which, you know, certain teachers or curriculum was trying to get you to feel emotions and connect that to the spirit. And so when I didn't feel those things, I felt like I just wasn't trying hard enough. The Pioneer Trek is a really good example of that. I grew up in Genola, and we have a woman that lives out there who is really obsessed with the Martin and Willie Handcart companies. And she arranged a trek several times when I was a teenager, but I think I only went once, about the time I was 15 or 16. And she essentially, we got to, the Sweetwater Crossing and a few other places. And she basically said, if you go to this certain spot and you think about the pioneers, you will have a spiritual experience. And if you don't, you're essentially dead inside. And I was like, well, that's a lot of pressure. And went, and I didn't feel it, because I felt like I was just trying to force something. I was trying to force a feeling, and it wasn't there. And so I put a lot more stock in spontaneous feelings rather than contrived ones, whether that be, you know, fast and testimony meeting or forcing myself to study the scriptures every day. Those things no longer work for me as spiritual, as I think, you know, connecting with the spirit. But every once in a while, something just hits me, and I feel like I have to be ready to receive those experiences wherever and whenever they come.
Great. I kind of feel the same way. You can't, that's, as far as the emotions and spirit, I feel like I, at some point, spent too much energy trying to separate the two.
Yeah, and it just caused a lot of guilt and a lot of disappointment.
Yeah. Okay, so tell us about your spiritual watering hole. Tell us about poetry and literature and what that's done for you.
Yeah, so being an English major at BYU has really been a really great transformation, and perhaps not in the way that BYU wanted, because one of their missions is, you know, strengthening testimony. And I guess that just really depends on how they want to define testimony, because in a lot of ways, my understanding and my learning of literature has greatly enhanced how I view the world around me and how I view the church. BYU's English program is, I think, has a heavy emphasis on critical thinking. And so I had a teacher the first semester I was back, and she would give us passages from the Book of Mormon and ask us to look at contradictions in it. What is the traditional reading of this scripture, the sons of Mosiah, but how can you read it differently? If you were to look at this without your spiritual training, how would this look? And that completely opened my eyes to a whole new way of doing how I read things rather than looking for things that maybe, my spiritual training had taught me to look at, and rather look at things for how they are, or be able to look at them from different points of view. And so, that also helped because I had before hadn't really been into poetry at all, and found it rather boring. But once I understood that and how to unpack some of the meaning, I found it, to have some real power and some real truth. I know, I've been reading through, Terrell and Fiona Givens's book, The Crucible of Doubt, and they have just a lot of their chapter headings have some really great poetry, a lot of which I recognize, from my classes. For instance, the Blake poem, The Little Lamb, and Tiger, Tiger, Songs of Experience, and a lot of the, romantic era literature. I know that they love, and I love it too, and just found that those things, the poets and the authors I was reading had some of the same doubts that I did. One of my favorites is Emily Dickinson, which may be a little bit narcissistic. She's my favorite because we have the same name, but, I love her because one of her poems, it begins, "This world is not conclusion." And the final two lines in it, "Narcotics cannot still the tooth that nibbles at the soul." And I think about those two lines a lot, at how once you've started to uncover things, no amount of narcotic, no amount of going back can make you think the way you once did. And then, that's gotta be okay for me. I'd also mention, I took a American lit class in which I read East of Eden by John Steinbeck, for one of the assignments and did a paper on it. And it has some really great lines in there. One of which is a scene in which they're talking about the book of Genesis and Cain at the decision between Cain and Abel and Cain's decision to kill Abel and whether or not he actually had a choice, because Genesis kind of frames it like, Cain just was going to be bad. He was born bad and he made bad choices and he was influenced by Satan. And that's just kind of the way it was supposed to be. But they have a great scene in there in which they basically say that, they believe it was more of a conversation and God said, look, you have a choice. You can decide. You always have a choice, what you pick and how you live your life. You're never predestined to be one way. And I've always, found great comfort and great truth in that. And so those are some of the experiences that I've had with reading.
I've had actually similar experiences recently because in high school, I was not focused on reading at all. And in college, I did chemistry, so I learned about math and those sorts of things. And so just now I've taken the time to go back to some of the classics. And I started with the thin ones, like Of Mice and Men.
Yeah, yeah.
But not freeing, but it just opens your mind up to get into these authors' minds who are people of experience, who are people that have thought deeply about life and its value and the choices that are made by themselves or by people around them. And so it's kind of like you get a pick from their brains and it just opens up the world in a new way.
Yeah.
So I really like, I resonate with what you're saying as far as just being opened up. I'm kind of on a binge of Mormon history, but then I'll take a break and I'll read some classic literature of some sort. And I find it really soothing. Not that it just makes everything feel better, but I don't know, it just feels human. It kind of feels good to bask in some of the the tragedy and the successes and triumphs that are in some of these stories.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I'm a really eclectic reader. I really love words and ideas that are well put, no matter where they are or, you know, what. My daughter has a pretty large library. She can't quite read on her own yet. She can read a little bit, but, some of my favorite experiences have actually been reading to her and experiencing how she reacts, to books. We read, I have a lot of, you know, really cute picture books, but one that I really love is called Grandpa Green. And I believe it won, one of the children's book awards, and I can't remember which one it is right now, but, one of the picture book awards a few years back. And it's about a grandpa, and it's his great grandson is telling the story of his life. He's a gardener, and so the illustrations all have hedges that are cut into scenes, various scenes of his life. So him growing up and having chicken pox and going to school and, you know, kissing a girl in sixth grade and wanting to be a horticulturist, but then, being drafted into the war and going to the war and marrying a woman in, I believe, France, and then coming home and having children and kind of his experiences, and then ending with the grandpa dying, but in a way that, you know, the grandpa just basically saying, you know, he's getting old now and that he's not going to be here anymore, but the things he left behind, these hedges and these memories, are still there. Just beautiful illustrations. And I think some of those major themes will go over her head. She's not going to understand the complexities of the book. But every time I read it to her, my father-in-law is a landscape architect and does a lot with plants. And my dad's a botanist. And so we both have plant fathers, plant grandpas. But, she loves that book, and I think at least on some level she's connecting that her experience resonates with this book, and already I can see her, you know, loving good books and loving good stories and learning to appreciate the experiences of other people through stories. Because I find that people that I don't think I'd ever be able to relate to on the street, I stop and think after I've read a book that challenges some of my paradigms. And I hope she feels that way too.
Oh, that's great. So if you had one book to recommend to someone like me that hadn't read in a long time, what story would you point them towards?
Oh man, that's a really great question. Because I've been reading so much for English that, you know, contemporary stuff I haven't been as up on. But I would really recommend East of Eden, by John Steinbeck. Steinbeck is really hit and miss. He has some really strange things, some really weird stuff. But East of Eden is probably his best full-length novel, in my opinion. It's very readable. It has a lot of really great religious themes, that if you like those kind of things, then it's really going to work. And that's probably my favorite book that I read last year. But I also read How Green Was My Valley, which is a book about a Welsh family, and I believe it's set around the Industrial Revolution, and it's kind of got some themes about coal miners and some labor. They try to form unions, and basically the upheaval of the Industrial Revolution in Wales. And it was really good too. It had some just really, really fantastic parts in it. So those are two books that I've read lately that I would highly recommend.
Great. Thank you so much for sharing your perspective and giving a little recommendation there. So thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you.
We have Miranda here, and Miranda has said that her spiritual watering hole is reading fantasy and sci-fi novels. And so, Miranda, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we can talk about the reading that you do.
My name is Miranda. I live in Pennsylvania. I am a blogger, so I guess I have to put in a plug for my blog. I blog about religion and politics at progressivemormonmom.com.
That sounds like very non-provocative writing. Religion and politics.
If anybody ever read it, they would probably hate me. But
okay.
But nobody does. And my I guess bread and butter writing is at plantingmoneyseeds.com. I'm actually a personal finance journalist, so I write for a number of publications about money. But I love politics and I love religion, so. Yeah, I rant about those things when I'm not writing about money.
Very good. So the money pays the bills, and then you can write whatever else you want.
That's right.
All right, that's good. That's how it works. Okay, so how do you think about or how do you describe the spirit or spirituality?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, obviously from a theological standpoint, your spirit is something separate. Separate intelligence that's created for God, but I think on a more individual level, it's even if it's not something separate, it's really more about how you connect with something larger than yourself. To me, spirituality isn't necessarily about, you know, I mean, it is about connecting with God, but even if you don't believe in God, you can still have this spiritual side that connects with other people. That connects with the universe around you and the things that you see, and that is really about even yourself and connecting with that better part of you that wants to be better and become a better person and progress and be bigger than you were yesterday. So I think spirituality kind of encompasses a lot of things and a lot of ideas. And I don't think that it has to be religiously motivated or even motivated necessarily by God.
I think that's a pretty good description. So do you separate the spiritual experiences and the emotional experiences, or do you see them the same thing or intertwined? How do you think about spirit and emotion?
Yeah, so that's a little more complex. But as you know, spirituality goes, I mean, spirituality is supposed to be complex and help you find those deeper meanings. But I really think that there's a connection between emotion and spirituality, but they're not necessarily the same thing. And maybe spirituality is an emotion or a specific type of emotion, but it is a different kind of feeling. And when you look at your brain and you look at neuroscience, you look at all these interesting and fascinating studies about how our brains are wired, your spirituality is different. The way your brain is wired for spirituality is different than the other parts of your brain that help you feel these other emotions that we're more familiar with. But it does kind of entwine. I mean, they have looked at, you know, when you are spiritual, when you focus on God, and especially when you focus on the love of God, then your brain changes, and the way that your synapses and neurons and everything works together changes. And they've done these studies where they find that you become, when you focus on different aspects that are considered positive aspects of God, like love and compassion and the love that God has for you and the expansiveness, and you spend the time thinking about that in prayer or in meditation, then you become better able to focus, you become more loving and empathetic yourself. And so I think in a way those are kind of entwined, but at the same time, your spiritual side, even if you're looking at it from a strictly like brain-centered standpoint, is actually different from other emotions that you feel. The way your spirituality and the way your brain is wired for God is different than the other emotions that you have in your head. So I think that that's kind of an interesting way to look at it. I know a lot of people kind of think, oh no, spirituality is the way you connect with God, and it's how God speaks to you, and God is speaking to you that way, and your emotions, those are your body. That's your body. That's the chemicals in your body. That's the mortal man. It's the natural man that's that's your emotions, and your spiritual side is how God talks to you and how you talk to God. And, but I think it's a very beautiful thought that maybe it's all in your head, in your brain, and you have these different aspects, and that your spiritual side can enhance the positive emotions that you feel and enhance your experience overall, if any of that makes sense.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense, and I think they have to be kind of entwined. Depending on the day, sometimes I think they're barely entwined, sometimes I think they're the same thing. And I don't think that's bad either. I think that's still, you can have spiritual emotions the way you describe them.
One of the things I was reading too is they talked about how when you focus on God's wrath, because we know, you know, sometimes you think of, you know, God as a vengeful, angry being. Mm-hmm. But when you focus on God's wrath, it also promotes changes in your brain that makes you more fearful of others, and that can, you know, force you to at least temporarily change your behaviors in response to this fear response. And so I thought that was interesting too, kind of the darker side of your spiritual connection with God.
Interesting. That's cool stuff. We're not focusing on the vengeful part.
We want the love. We want the happiness.
That's right. We want comfort. So tell us about your spiritual watering hole, which is fantasy and science fiction reading. Tell us how that works for you.
Yeah, so not only is it way more fun than reading scriptures, isn't that an awful thing to say? I find that it actually also gives me more spiritual fulfillment to read these than to maybe read the things we're supposed to be reading, I guess, that stuff they tell us we should read. Because I find that fantasy and science fiction often has a more nuanced view of life, and it has a more mixed kind of approach. When you're reading some of these other things, it's like, here's this checklist of things that you need to do, and now you're a good person who's going to have a lovely afterlife. And when I read fantasy and science fiction, I get in there and it's more, you know, human to me, and it's people struggling to overcome, and they're very nuanced, and they're, you know, it's not just black and white, and it's gray, and they're making progress, but they're flawed. And some of them are people that you would look at and be like, I really don't like you, but now I'm starting to like you a little bit because I understand you a little more. And so to me, it really kind of helps me get in touch with those feelings of empathy and understanding, and realizing that not everybody is like me, and that I should still have compassion and love for them in a way that these other things don't really do that. Like when you read your scriptures, it's like, do what I say or you will be punished. Or, you know, here's how you can have this lovely, beautiful afterlife. Here's a list of things you need to do in order to accomplish that. And when I read fantasy and science fiction, I'm like, oh, this is progress. Making progress as a person, not a checklist, not, you know, we're going to destroy you. Although there is some of that because, you know, adventure and magic and whatever. But I just like that it looks at you as a person and says, you can overcome this and you can become better. And, you know, even though you have all these flaws, you can still, you know, work magic, and you could still go on this adventure, and you can still overcome even though you have these flaws. And to me, that's just very reassuring, and it's kind of a nice uplift. I don't feel bad about myself.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing, is the scriptures and the practices that we're supposed to do, they have a lot of baggage, and they have an expectation attached with them.
Yeah, definitely.
Where this, you know, what's the expectation of reading a science fiction novel? It's at the very least, it's to be entertained, and then beyond that, it's whatever you,
right,
you know, wherever you take it. And so in some ways I could see how, especially when you've gotten to a place where you start questioning everything and you're reading the scriptures and why are they doing this and I'm not doing that. And it just kind of like you said, it feels like someone's telling you, do this, don't do that, where sometimes it's good to take a little break.
Yeah.
And because that feeling of guilt or that feeling of I should do this way. I think it closes us. It can close us off a little bit from being inspired to do good.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, and I think there's a lot of that. Like, oh, well, that's the other thing too. Is like when you're reading science fiction or fantasy, you don't have this. Oh, well, I didn't read 30 minutes today. I am a terrible person. You know, you're like, right. Oh, you know, I just read and I feel good for a little while and I'm done and that's cool. And, you know, if you read 5 minutes of scriptures, you're like, I really should have read 10 or 15 minutes of scriptures.
Yeah.
I really should have read another chapter.
Yeah.
Why didn't I finish Alma 42 tonight?
Yeah. Yeah. You haven't quite checked it off the list right.
Yeah.
Okay. So what are some of your favorite either authors or series or novels that you've found the most, let's say, that had the greatest power to open you up?
Yeah, so I really, it's really kind of, well, I guess it fits. One of the earliest fantasy series that I read was Chronicles of Narnia. My parents got it for me when I was in second grade. Mm-hmm. And I loved it because it was just taking you away to this magical place. And even now, that's like my comfort. That's my go-to comfort reading. So when I'm sick and I'm just like laid out on the couch and I can't do anything else, I just sit down and I read all of the, I just read through the Chronicles of Narnia because it's just, it's like comfort to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I also really, I really enjoy this series of books. It's called The 12 Houses and it's by, excuse me, Sharon Shin. And it's just this, you know, just this basic fantasy series. It has a little bit of, my least favorite ones in there are the ones that focus a lot on the romance, but it's just this adventure fantasy series and it's just entertaining and the characters grow and change and they progress, which I really like. They don't stay the same. They're different. They're slightly different people at the end of the series. And I also really like it because there are strong women and strong women doing strong women things and, and being in charge and, you know, and the characters that they have are strong in different ways. They have, you know, one woman who's really more, got a lot of characteristics that we traditionally associate with males, but at the same time, there's another strong female character who has more feminine characteristics. So it's I really like the way it shows, you know what, not everybody's the same and not everybody has to. I go to that series when I'm feeling really down about the fact that I am not the ideal Mormon woman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't enjoy cooking. I'm not a natural nurturer. Mm-hmm. All of these things when you go to church and they say, oh, well, women are naturally this. I am not this.
Yeah.
I am not those things.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I'm like, I feel bad. And so going to this book series where there's this diverse cast of characters with different characteristics and different strengths, and women being strong in different ways rather than just one way is really helpful to me and very affirming. So I like to go there. And then I love the Foundation trilogy by Isaac Asimov, because it's just straightforward and it shows, you know, human ingenuity and there's a little bit of wry wit in there and it just kind of moves you through and it's just, you know, and it's about how they solve problems. It's really great for like, you know, thinking through problems when I'm, you know, having a creative type block or have a problem. I like reading the Foundation trilogy because it really is about, you know, different ways of solving problems and how you move to different stages of life and different stages of society. And just looking at that and seeing that in my own life and being able to apply that, I think really helps.
Okay, so there's one problem.
Oh, dear.
Whenever I hear people talking about all these great books, my list that I have not read just keeps growing and growing. I'm like, now I keep having this list of, ooh, I need to read that, ooh, I need to read that. And it, man, there's just almost, there's never enough time for all the stuff that I'd like to get through.
I know. And then you're stuck having to read the scriptures too, right?
Yeah, that's true. Well, I think this is good. This provides a, I think for me, just listening, provides a different way to look at reading, in particular, novels that, you know, not just informational, like, you know, sometimes I think, well, I'm not reading the scriptures, but at least I'm reading Mormon history stuff, or I'm reading, you know, Mormon culture stuff. But I think you're right. I think we can expand beyond that, and it can still serve us in a similar way to prod us in the right direction.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, thanks for coming on, Miranda. I enjoyed talking with you.
Well, thank you for having me.
All right. Well, you have a good night.
You too.
And now I get to talk with Connor Hilton. Connor has shared that one of his spiritual supplement methods is writing. And so, Connor, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we can talk about writing.
Okay. Yeah. So I grew up mostly in Idaho Falls, Idaho. Raised in the church, active whole life, basically. Went to BYU for a semester before my mission, and then I served in Lithuania.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that was like 2010, 2012. Now I'm back at BYU. I'm studying English and political science. Planning on pursuing a PhD in English, hopefully to be a English professor.
All right, wonderful. So for you, how do you think about the spirit, or how do you think, like, spiritual experiences or spirituality?
Yeah. So for me, the spirit's tied pretty closely to, like, thoughts. I mean, also feelings to a certain extent. But it's more like kind of a extension of the natural abilities, I guess, that I feel like I was born with. And so the spirit, I feel, kind of like enhances that. So typically for me, when I feel the spirit, it's more of like a little prodding to think about a certain idea, or just kind of changes the direction of my thought rather than a very clear directive one way or the other.
Interesting. So kind of just a gentle nudge to use your head, it's, if I were to crudely summarize what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay, that's good. I like that. So it doesn't sound like you really separate spiritual and emotional experiences necessarily. Is that right? You kind of feel like they're tied together a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like almost every time I've felt the spirit, there's been some emotional component, but not necessarily every emotional experience I've had has been spiritual, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah, I could understand that. Okay, so earlier I've talked with some folks that have found different types of literature as their spiritual watering hole.
Mm-hmm.
But you're taking a little bit different approach, and you're talking about writing as your spiritual watering hole. So why don't you describe how that works for you?
Okay. Yeah. So, and part of it stems from a love of reading and a love of literature, and recognizing like the value in the written word. I guess the way it works for me typically is like I have a lot of thoughts about things, or just my mind is really active, like trying to figure stuff out, but I don't really have a clear grasp on what exactly it is I'm thinking. Like I couldn't really articulate it always.
Yeah, so, I know that feeling.
Yeah, so so writing is kind of the channel for me to then focus those thoughts, and specifically with spiritual or like theological topics. As I've written more about them, there have been a few times where I've felt like pretty strong spiritual witnesses, I guess, that what I've been writing is true. Like there's a like sense of purity, truth around what it is that I've just written. And I may not have really recognized what that thought was before I started writing it out.
So similar to, I don't know if it would be a reverse epiphany, but epiphany after the fact.
Right, right.
You've got something out there, and then you have this realization that it has some weight to it or truth to it. So when you say you realize that something you've written is true, how do you, you know, the true is kind of a fun word online Mormonism. So how do you think of the word true or truth?
I feel like truth is something in this context that like following whatever the idea is, if it's true, will lead to good things, like will bring you closer to God. So, I mean, like for some people, truth is pretty closely intertwined with facts or historicity. And that's not really the case for me.
So one question I have is, you've thought a lot about writing.
Mm-hmm.
I've read a little bit about writing for therapy, and the initial thought is getting stuff off your chest.
Yeah.
But as I was reading Jonathan Haidt's book, The Happiness Hypothesis, he's talking about this, and he points out that the research on catharsis has shown that venting is pretty much useless in really removing the anger. It kind of feels good in the moment, but in the long term, it's ineffective. And writing for venting, or I guess the possible problem with writing is it makes your ideas more concrete.
Right.
And so you have one thought and you put it down on paper, and if that thought was incorrect or overly negative or overly positive or whatever, it's hard to escape that once you've written it down. You kind of make it, you kind of dig a groove or dig a trench a little bit. So have you thought about that issue of kind of dictating to yourself, as you make your thoughts concrete, it's harder to think about new ideas or be open to new ideas?
Right. There's definitely, I mean, that kind of tendency to, once you have something concrete, to latch onto it and then not want to let it go. And a lot of that, I think, can be tied to how personal writing can be. You kind of feel like what you've written exists as like an extension of yourself. So then any kind of critique or response to that, to the writing, serves as like a critique of your own like individual person. I mean, one of the reasons I enjoy writing and making my thoughts concrete is to ideally start some kind of dialogue with other people. And so I think that's one way to kind of combat that possible outcome of like just committing yourself to what you've already written.
You mean by having other people read it and
right.
and talk about it?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that makes sense. I mean, that's the whole peer review process. That's
right.
what editors are for. But I agree. Is I've written a few blog posts, and I've written down other ideas from time to time, and it makes your thoughts more clear on a certain subject, so you can, in person, you could articulate your thoughts a little better. Could you share with us the type of writing that you like to do that you find most uplifting or that you find most inspiring or whatever adjective you might have? Like, is it just writing down your thoughts? Is it writing a story? What kind of writing do you enjoy the most?
So probably the most consistent writing that I do. I have a blog that I try to update weekly. It's probably closer to every other week. So the majority of the things that I write for that are related to Mormonism, either my thoughts on doctrinal topics or cultural issues or other things like tangentially related to the world of Mormon studies. But I also write a decent amount of poetry. It's interesting because those two things kind of serve very different purposes for me. When I write for my blog, it's much more trying to like organize my thoughts, and then I feel like I've come out with a better understanding of what I believe, what my like conception of the world is. Whereas when I write poetry, it's more to kind of capture an emotion or something that I've experienced. Or if I'm feeling things that are a little more abstract, then the poetry kind of helps come to terms with whatever emotion I'm feeling, even if there's not like a clear, concrete result. Just kind of capturing that same emotion on paper helps me better understand what it is that I'm feeling.
Interesting. I think that's great. I actually think a lot of people that are either in the middle of a faith crisis or just looking for another way, I think they'll find your experience useful. You know, and I think it's good to point out, a lot of times people hear blog and they feel like a blog is something that you put out for the public to see and be critical of, but you can make blogs personal and you can write in journals. But I do like your thought on sharing those posts or whatever you've written with someone, either with the whole world, if that fits your personality, or maybe with someone that you trust, so you can critique and mold and shape your thoughts over time. So if there's anything else that you want to share, now's the time. If not...
No, I think that sums it up. Yeah.
All right, wonderful. All right, well, thanks, Connor, for coming on. Well, I had a lot of fun interviewing those fine folks, and I found it interesting that it was reading science fiction. I was a little skeptical when I got into a Facebook group and said, hey, you know, what are your alternate spiritual practices or whatever? And I got some responses, and they were like, reading science fiction. And I was like, what? Reading science fiction, how does that work? Like, you know, it just didn't make sense. So it was interesting. As that was Miranda that was reading science fiction, but she explained it well on how, for her, and I think for a lot of people, the roles that we find in scripture or the characters that are there are often one-dimensional, and she finds in these deep stories, these science fiction stories, there are lots of different roles and lots of different ways to sort of project yourself into the story. So it was a lot deeper than I thought, and I can see how that would work. And like I said, you know, it adds to my list of books I need to look into now.
Yeah, no, and I think that similarity and there's that similarity with what you were talking about in the beginning with all of these people that you interviewed, where it's like, again, pointing at that growth and that need to continue searching for that, which is going to be best for us, you know, where they were all kind of talking about having these expectations and some of those didn't necessarily work, but that being able to find spirituality or some sort of a practice that did bring a lot of meaning to them through science fiction or whatever. I think that's beautiful. I like it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too. And I've actually got a couple more interviews, of different people having different practices that they've found meaningful or useful. And so next time we get a hole in our schedule, we'll put that in there.
Okay.
So that's what we've got. And next week we have another episode coming up of Ask a Mormon Sex Therapist with Dr. Jennifer Finlayson Fife. So everyone look forward to that. It's always fun talking with Jennifer.
Absolutely.
Well, Mormons, keep keeping it weird.